Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you, and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Hey everyone, welcome to From the Kitchen Table. I'm Sean Duffy, along with my co-host for the podcast, my partner in life and my wife, Rachel Campos Duffy.
It's great to be back at the kitchen table, Sean. And today we have a topic that's very close to our heart.
Yes.
And that is the persecution of Christians really around the world. But there's probably no greater hotspot right now than Africa, Nigeria specifically. And we searched, our producers searched far and wide. Who can we get to talk about this very important topic? And the name that came to us through all that research was Reverend Johnny Moore. He is the former U.S. Commissioner on Religious Freedom. He served under Trump and Biden administration. He's an author. He's a business person. And he's a human rights activist. And you know that you're a really great human rights activist when you're sanctioned by the Communist Party in China. Those are definitely good creds. So with no further ado, Johnny, welcome to the kitchen table.
Thanks. Good to be with you. Sorry it's about this subject, though.
No, it is a terrible subject. And, you know, I was looking at some of the stats here. Since 2023, 8,222 defenseless Christians have been hacked to death. I mean, I could go through even more numbers, but, you know, it's just astounding. And what's really crazy is I'm in the news business. Sean's in the news business. We've talked about it a little bit on Fox and Friends. It's not a top story. And so I want you maybe first to just lay out for us what are the conditions right now, maybe specifically in Africa, and why you think that no one's talking about this.
I mean, look, what we have in the western part of the African continent is we have a piecemeal caliphate that's being formed by, I guess the best way of putting it is when everyone saw the atrocities that were committed on October 7th by Hamas in southern Israel, the way they burned people alive, decapitated babies, I mean, horrible, horrible things I don't even like to say. Those same tactics are consistently being deployed, targeting the Christians in this part of the African continent. Okay, so what you have is you have, like, in Nigeria alone, and by the way, it's much more than Nigeria. It's just Nigeria is the biggest country. But in Nigeria alone, you have three states in the north of Nigeria where 70% of the churches have been burned to the ground. Thousands and thousands of people have been killed. This happens all the time. It happens every day. And the world doesn't pay attention. And to answer one of your one of the reasons why the world doesn't pay attention is because the U.S. government isn't paying attention. I mean, it just happened a few days ago. One more time, we had hundreds of children kidnapped from a school, and the National Security Advisor in the White House issued this, like, fluffy message about how the United States government looks forward to working with the Nigerian government in order to, you know, to rescue these people. And our ambassador to Nigeria told me in her house that Nigeria has lots of problems, but one problem that it doesn't have is a religious freedom problem. It's just, like, unbelievable. It is unbelievable what's happening over there.
So Johnny, why is that? Why, obviously, the information is easily obtained from the U.S. government. We know what's happening. your point is they don't care, or to the point where they'll gloss over or fluff over what's happening to Christians, as you mentioned, not just in Nigeria, but around the continent. Why is that?
They don't want to name it for what it is, which is Islamist terrorism. That's what this is. This is Al-Qaeda. This is ISIS. This is Boko Haram. They believe that if they call it what it is, first of all, they don't believe it is what it is. They don't like to talk about religion at all. So what they try to do is they try to give every other reason. So they say, this actually isn't about religion. It's not about Islamist terrorists walking into Christian villages saying Allahu Akbar before they behead the children and burn the houses and the churches down. It's actually about a tribal conflict and I'm not telling a lie here. Okay, this is the actual fact. Look at all the statements. They say it's because of climate change. This is literally their policy position. Because of climate change, all these people are moving around and they're attacking one another's village. The herdsmen, and farmers.
Yeah, they're displaced. And so they just like need the land, or they're displaced because of climate change. It's so insane. So I get like this administration, Johnny, is horrible. And they are, I feel like I'm like those, back in the Eastern European days when just people accepted the government's crap and you just accept it. Okay, I get the U.S. government, the Biden administration is never going to, this doesn't fit their narrative. They don't like to call out anything religious. They don't like to call out Islamists, especially now when they're, having to appease, the Palestinian protesters. Okay, all that politics aside, Nigeria, and tell me if I'm right, is 80% Catholic, correct?
It's basically split, 50-50, 60-40 between Christian and Muslim, and the majority of those Christians are Catholics, for sure.
So where the hell is the Pope? I mean, I hear him talking about climate change. I'm Catholic.
Yeah.
I hear him talking about a lot of stuff that doesn't have to do with religion. And I can't think of anything more important than religious liberty and protecting your flock in Africa, which, by the way, the African church, the African Catholic Church, is the fastest growing, the most vibrant. Why would the Pope not be raising holy H-E-L-L on this?
Well, I think there's several reasons for that. One of the reasons why is one of this Pope's sort of like arch, I don't know if you have arch nemeses in the Catholic Church, but the Catholic leaders and the cardinal, in fact, in Nigeria are like staunch theological adversaries to the progressive shift of the Catholic Church. And so Pope Francis,
the African Church is very conservative,
super
Orthodox,
traditional.
And that leads into foreign policy, right? Because we forget the Vatican, I'm not Catholic, but the Vatican is also a country, right? And they have a foreign policy. And I'm sorry to say, but their foreign policy has been bad in every area. I mean, they made a deal with the Chinese Communist Party. It's one of the reasons why I made the communists mad, because I called them out on it. They routinely talk to the Iranians. The foreign minister of the Vatican actively engages with the Iranian regime with a number of senior ayatollahs. They've been totally, totally wrong, like usual, when it comes to Israel and the Palestinians, taking every piece of propaganda that's coming from Hamas. I mean, this is a big issue. And look, I agree with you. This administration in the United States is an utter disaster. And they're in their absolute worst on foreign policy. The whole world is on fire. We just evacuated another embassy, a few days ago in Haiti, of all places. I mean, they're bad in lots of ways. They're worse in foreign policy. But I wonder where we are as Christians all around the world. They're like a billion of us. Aside from over a billion Catholics, there's 700 million evangelicals. Why aren't we raising our voices? Mm-hmm. Why aren't we adopting churches? Why aren't we, putting the pressure on, because there's a lot of things that we could do. And the first thing we could do is we could tell the stories of the victims. I mean, this is the beautiful thing about the church in Africa. They are so strong and they love God so much. And they believe in the Bible so entirely. Like, they just keep persevering. They shouldn't have to, but they keep doing it. And they named, I was just looking at lists of victims just to get myself in the right mindset before we had this conversation. And one of the victims was 13 years old. Her parents named her Patience. Another one was 6 years old and her parents named her Revelation. Another one, same family, a four-year-old, the parents named their child Rejoice. Okay, this is who the African church is. And these people are coming and killing them just because they're Christians. I mean, that's just a fact. So yes, our government should be doing more, beginning with the Vatican, but the churches ought to be talking about this every Sunday.
Yeah, I've heard them talk a lot about the Jewish situation. I haven't seen a lot of pastors, evangelical pastors, for example, talk about this on the scale of Sarsha.
Johnny, really quick. So we're talking about the Biden administration and why they won't call out a Christian genocide in Africa, right? And why don't more Christians stand up and use their voices to advocate for those who are being persecuted? But if you look here in the States, you have Joe Biden and his administration persecuting Christians as well. I mean, they would send the FBI into Catholic churches. By the way, these Latin Mass Catholics, some of the nicest people. They're devout. They're nonviolent. They don't agree with Joe Biden on a lot of things because they're devout Catholics or Christians. And they're sending the FBI into churches looking for crimes from these Catholics, and they're starting to go after evangelicals as well. And the bottom line is, we don't stand up against a violation of our First Amendment rights to practice our religion. So if we can't even stand up for ourselves in America, I find it hard for Christians to stand up and fight on behalf of those who are being persecuted in Africa. And I get to the point, I think it's shameful on all of us that we don't stand up and fight harder for those who share the faith.
Johnny, do you think, as Sean said, I mean, like, I agree with what Sean's saying. Like, we haven't stood up really very well for our own rights here, but I did see a lot of evangelicals, including the Speaker of the House, take very strong stance in defense of Israel. But yeah, for our own brothers sisters in Africa, what?
Yeah, and
here's the Black Caucus, by the way. That, too. That has a Congressional Black Caucus.
Here's what's interesting about this. I mean, when I wrote a book on this a few years ago called The Next Jihad, a major HarperCollins book that no one read because no one cares about the issue. But the reason why I wrote the book The Next Jihad is because of my co-author, who's a rabbi, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, who's the associate dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, like one of the most unrelenting advocates against anti-Semitism, for the memory of the Holocaust. They hunted down the perpetrator of the Holocaust to make sure that they faced justice. And I wrote the book, and I went to Nigeria because Rabbi Cooper was coming to me as a Christian, and he was saying, where are you guys? He said, yeah, you're being totally decimated all around the world. He spent his whole life, 50 years, studying the Holocaust. He's like, what is happening to these people is unbelievable. And it was a Jewish rabbi who, like, shook my conscience and said to me, like, why aren't you Christians doing something about this? And the same analogy applies when it comes to our own religious freedom, because, you know, having invested a lot of my life in advocating for religious freedom, here's something I can tell you. The constitutions of most of the worst violators of religious freedom in the world, the most authoritarian countries, virtually all of them, even the Soviet constitution, okay, when we had the Soviet Union, they enshrined these protections in their legal documents. They just ignored them and didn't enforce them. And that's what scares me about what's happening in democracies around the world, in the United States, you know, in Japan, in several major democracies around the world. And we forget Nigeria is a democracy. It's a democracy of 100 million people, and we're giving it a free pass, you know. We have to, and I'll tell you, like, I don't like to compare, you know, Christians getting beheaded on beaches in Libya, you know, to marginalization that we feel. But you know what? Every single time I sit with these people, and I've done it in dozens of countries around the world, sometimes in secret, sometimes with people who risk their lives by meeting with me, they always tell me the same thing. They say, it didn't begin this way here. It didn't begin with beheadings and arbitrary, you know, detention. It began with our kids being treated differently in school. It began with, you know, with spiritual leaders being censored by the government. It began with the use of the state in order to suppress the views of religious people. And that's a real warning, even for us in the United States.
That's 100% true. I was interested when I was prepping for this on Japan. I had no idea that Japan, I think you say that it's like maybe the worst, can't be worse than Nigeria.
No. But what's happening in Japan is what's happening in France. It's what's happening in India. It's what's happening in the United States. In Japan, there is a large church. It's not a church whose theology I have anything to do with, but it's a major church movement that's incredibly politically influential. And right now, the Japanese government is trying to take them out. There's a court case that's happening right now, and so you have the most powerful democracy, the third, now the fourth, Germany just overtook it, the fourth wealthiest country around the world, within a stone's throw from the Communist Party of China, that's this close from revoking the status of an entire church in the entire entire country. And I'm telling you, in states in the United States, you know, we saw it in COVID-19, you know, we saw hardly any governor was willing to say that these religious institutions provided essential services to their communities while people are at home, depressed, can't care for their loved ones, dealing with death, doing all of these things. Everything else is an essential service, but the Christian communities aren't. Like, these are warning signs. And I know how the Communist Party...
COVID was a warning sign. You're so right. You're so right about that.
You know, Johnny, also, I think what's happening, and we're seeing this not just in America, not just in Nigeria, it's happening all over the world. And that's the same time that we have this globalist movement. And Rachel and I talk about this a lot. The globalist movement really is, I think, a Marxist communist movement. And its effort is to take away the liberties and freedoms of people and consolidate them in one elite group of whether they're political leaders or wealthy business leaders. And it brings me to the question again. So we could come back and go, you know, what do we do? What do we do here? What do Christians have to do around the world? But I want to go back to Nigeria. If we had an administration, let's say we have a Trump administration that says we're going to address what's happening in Nigeria and the genocide with Christians, what do you do? Do you put boots on the ground? I have to imagine that just sanctioning the government of Nigeria with money and trade probably wouldn't be enough for them to take action. These are ideological movements that are happening in these countries. And it begs the question, it's really challenging to change course and get a government to protect a religion's right to exist.
Well, I'll tell you what we did, which was working, and what could be done again. The first thing is, President Trump confronted the president of Nigeria in the Rose Garden on the White House lawn in front of the entirety of the press corps for what was happening to Christians in the country. And I
can you paint us a picture of what that looked like? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was like this elegant state visit. You know, the leader of the probably the second most powerful country in Africa, Egypt's number one. Normal White House visit. It comes time for the press conference. And one of the first things President Trump says in the press conference, you go and watch the video, you know, why are you allowing Christians to be killed in your country? And the whole country went crazy. And you know what happened? For a solid 4 or 5 months, it stopped or significantly declined. And that tells us something. It tells us the Nigerian government can do more than they're willing to do. And so the bully pulpit of the United States is powerful. We have to send a message. In the Trump administration, the State Department designated Nigeria a country of particular concern. That's the highest religious freedom violator. The Biden administration revoked that designation. We have to put it back in place. We have to do smarter things with Africa generally. I mean, I don't think most Americans realize that our Africa command is in Europe. Now, come on, like it's a huge, huge, huge continent. We could move our Africa command to a country like Morocco. That's an incredible ally of the United States of America. And we would be in closer proximity to that whole Francophone part of Africa, leading into the Sahel, you know, that whole region. Those are just, and then of course, sanctioned to the sky, all of these corrupt figures, you know, that have billions and billions of dollars of assets in our country, not to mention in the United Kingdom and the EU. If the US signals this matters, as we've seen in lots of other ways, everybody will fall in line. Right now, yeah. the US is carrying water for an Islamist regime, you know, that's growing in Nigeria and trying to find every other reason for what, you know, it's just like common sense. If they're yelling
or foreign aid, right, Johnny? I mean, we could make foreign aid. I'm sure we give a lot of money to Nigeria. We can make foreign aid.
$1 billion a year.
Huh?
$1 billion a year is how much money we give to Nigeria.
$1 billion a year. That could be contingent on religious liberty being protected for the Christians. And we should care about it. We're Christians.
But listen, we're going to give $1 billion a year to Nigeria as you have a Christian genocide taking place. That in and of itself is, I mean, unthinkable. It's outrageous.
This is what the Biden administration does. I mean, the Biden administration pays off the bad guys and puts pressure on our allies. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know, for example, Johnny, what's happening in Latin America, that countries who still have retained their Christian values are getting, their leaders are getting persecuted. They won't get meetings with the Biden administration. They'll get snubbed because they're not interested in climate change, abortion, or LGBTQ stuff that the State Department wants to attach to aid and other benefits that they get from the U.S. government. I'm sure that's happening in Africa.
And actually, it's even worse than that, because what's happening in Latin America, and it is happening in Africa, is, in fact, we saw it a few weeks ago, right? Remember when Lula made his statements at the African Union? This was mm-hmm. The Biden administration is turning a blind, in fact, they're sort of facilitating a detente between progressive leaders of countries in Latin America and Africa and the Communist Party of China and the Islamic Republic of Iran, right? So we had a weakened Maduro in Venezuela. Now we have a stronger Maduro. We have stuff happening in Nicaragua. We have, you know, we have this crazy situation in Brazil, and it's not in our interest, like, whatsoever. And it just boggles the mind. But remember, this is an administration that said their number one priority was human rights, but they're picking and choosing who's human rights, and then apparently they just gave up on it entirely, because I guarantee the people in Haiti and Afghanistan and, you know, in southern Israel and in Nicaragua and, you know, all these other places aren't seeing it's like where is the U.S. where is the U.S. government? In fact, the CIA director is doing a lot of the diplomacy these days. It's like, what is going on with the State Department whatsoever?
We'll be right back with much more after this.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
If you really listen to Joe Biden, the number one priority at all costs is climate change, which, by the way, I think is also an effort to take away our freedom and liberty.
And colonize Africa, by the way. It's turning it into...
Yeah, keep Africa poor, make sure they can't utilize resources that they have in their countries and make them use electric vehicles. So, Johnny, if I think of... I know evangelicals, I know Catholics, just general Christians, you know, most of them are good people. They go to church on Sunday, they go to work, they raise their families, and they aren't involved in protecting their religious liberty in their own country. They're not concerned with, you know, the plight of of Christians in far off countries. And I think we're getting to a place where more Christians have to be activated. How do we do that? What is the role? What if you're to say, hey, Christians out there, this is what you have to do. Small steps, big steps, but this is what the Christian community has to do moving forward to protect ourselves here, but also protect other brothers and sisters around the world.
There's so many things. I'll pick four or five. Number one, when it comes to the persecution of people around the world, know their stories and tell their stories. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're fortunate enough to be able to travel to visit them, your American passport is a ticket to making a difference in the world. Like, get on an airplane, sit and talk to the victims. Most of us can't do that. But what we can do is we can tell their stories to our families, to our congregations, to awaken the conscience of people.
Are you collecting those stories, Johnny? Is there a place where we can go to read these stories? Because the media is not covering it. We had to.
Yeah, where do we see the stories?
Yeah, I mean, you can just, I don't like to talk about my books, but you can read my books alone. The New Book of Christian Martyrs is 600 pages of stories.
Oh, I love that. The next is that jihad. What it's called, The New Book of Christian Martyrs?
Yeah. And The Next Jihad is the book on Nigeria. But we have to educate ourselves. That's number one. Number two, we have to be clear about what we actually believe, because what's happening now is our beliefs are being smeared. Like this, Christian nationalism nonsense that people are talking about. You know, this is a political tactic in order to stigmatize evangelical and Catholic engagement in the public square. Like, we don't want a theocracy in America. We just want people to leave us alone. That's what we want. Like, believe what you want to believe and let us believe what we want to believe and stop trying to, force us to change our sincerely held religious beliefs. We don't do that in the United States of America. It's the first clause of the first sentence of our First Amendment for a reason. That's how important religious freedom is. So number two, don't let other people define you. I mean, we, as Christians, the Salvation Army, that's our heritage, right? Tearing down the Berlin Wall. No, that's our heritage. Martin Luther King's march, he was animated by his faith. Don't let people hijack all of this stuff, define who you are. And then number three, be an advocate. Pick up your phone, call your member of Congress, whatever their political party, put pressure on them around these issues. We've actually seen again and again and again with this current administration that the technocratic state, underneath this administration, which they've staffed, is super, super crazy, crazy progressive. We've seen a number of situations where Democrats and Republicans have partnered together to push back from Congress. We're about to see it probably with TikTok, in the Communist Party of China. Vote for your preferred elected official, but whoever wins the election, make sure they know your name. Be unrelenting with your emails, with your phone calls, and then pray. And how should you pray? You should pray the way you hope someone would pray for you if you were the mom of one of these girls that was just kidnapped. If you were the lone surviving family member from the village, if you're the pastor who just started his fourth church because his three previous ones were burned down, you should pray the way you hope someone would pray for you. You should stand up and speak up the way you hope someone would speak for you. Give the way you hope someone would give to you. Do all of these things.
And vote in a way, the proof is in the pudding. You see that Joe Biden, claims to be a Catholic, campaigned with rosary beads, never stops talking about that. The Washington Post did some fluff piece his life is guided by Catholicism. There is nothing this man has done. Nothing. Not his personal life, not his position on abortion, certainly not his position on religious liberty and the protection of Christians in America or around the world. He's weaponized his, basically state, the police, the state police, the FBI, against good Christians. He's expanding that war on Christians. So, Christians have to wake up and go, listen, maybe Donald Trump has had affairs, maybe even with porn stars, but who's the one who stood up in the Rose Garden and called the Nigerian president out for killing, for doing nothing about the killing of Christians? So we need to vote that way. Who are the members of Congress who are the most aware or willing to advocate on behalf of this issue that you've worked with?
most of them on the Republican side of the aisle care about the issue, but I'm sorry to say that we don't hear enough from the leaders of the Foreign Affairs Committee or the Intelligence Committees, or that all intersect with national security, because that's actually I always say to people, like, look, you should care about these people for a thousand reasons, but even if you don't care about these people, if you have a heart as hard as stone, like, it's in the best interest of the United States of America to solve this problem now. Because I'm telling you, like, I was with a senior, very serious former intelligence person who told me that the worst situation that this person had seen in the entirety of the world, and this is a very scary world that we live in, was what he personally witnessed in the northeast of Nigeria. Like, if you think about what happened in Afghanistan, you think about how, you know, Osama bin Laden was able to go to Sudan and to Somalia. Like, we've had in the Biden administration, we've had a coups all across the center of Africa. We had peace between Israel and the Sudan. Now we have a civil war in Sudan with 17 million displaced people. Mm. Like, the situation is really, really dire. And so even if you have a heart as hard as stone and you don't care about human rights, and in foreign policy circles, you're what they call a realist, right? Just interest. It's all about power. Like, it is common sense that the United States of America, for its own sake, whatever your political party, ought to be doing more now with this part of the continent. So,
you mean to contain Islamists and their rise? Yeah, and
by the way, our allies in the Arab world, the Middle East, are begging us to do it. Okay, these people want to take them out too. Okay, they're so confused why we aren't caring and paying more attention to this.
So, Johnny, I like your point. So, I was a member of Congress for 9 years, and if I get one letter on one issue, I'm like, okay, I got one letter. You get 5-10 letters, you know, you might start to pay attention. Just, and I've told this story before, but I got all these letters one time about bees, right? And the death of bees. And frankly, I couldn't give a damn about bees. I do now, but I didn't care about bees. And I thought it was I thought there were crazy people writing me about bees. But when I got like 800 letters from people in my district on bees, I was like, maybe there's a problem with bees dying. And if bees die, there's a huge issue with being able to grow food, right? And so to your point, to organize, when you sit by yourself in your home, it's hard to go, how do I activate other people to feel this cause as passionately as I do? But what's unique with Christians and church-going Christians is you have a whole congregation or parish that you could help advocate to. You could get your pastor or your priest to go, we should all write our congressman and senator on this issue. And by the way, pastor or priest, we got how many other Christian churches in our community? Why don't you reach out to the others and see if they'll, in their congregation or in their church, actually join us, and we're going to all write.
Yeah. Or if the priest tells the bishop, and then the bishop instructs every single priest in his diocese, you're right, Sean, that's how you do it.
And you send 800, 2,000 letters to a member of Congress on this issue to go, we care, and we care what you say about it and how you fight on this. I guarantee you, they may not care like I didn't care about bees, but I had a look into bees.
And all this of a sudden, is America. I mean, this is the beautiful part about our country. Like, for all of our flaws, and we always think we're falling apart. Okay, this is part of the American, you know, psychology. But for all of our flaws, like, this is a country where the people's voice still matters. And you know what I also tell people? I say, like five visits to a local office of a member of Congress is worth like 1,000 visits to Capitol Hill. You know, to just, because it's like the local community, like bring your kids class and just show up at the local office and let them tell those little kids why they shouldn't care more about these people being killed.
You know, that's so interesting to me. That's another thing. A parent listening, we have a lot of parents who are listening to our podcast. You could organize, you know, talk to your kid's teacher or principal and say, you know, at this Catholic school, at this Christian school, we're all going to write letters to our member of Congress from the children in defense of those little girls that you talked about, you know, a little girl named Rejoice, a little girl named Revelation. These are the voices. I want to also ask you, you know, before we go, because you make a really great case in your writings, in your articles, in your books about why religious freedom matters. So, you know, obviously, as a Christian, when I hear the stories that are happening in these villages, the hacking, the
kidnapping,
the kidnappings, the forced marriages that kidnap these Christian girls and then force them to marry Muslims and become Muslims and put them in burqas and all the awful stuff. And by the way, Johnny, I'm still mad about the Michelle Obama and her, you know,
bring back our girls.
Bring back our girls campaign. Where is she on this? And it's happening in Africa. And that campaign didn't do anything because she refused to talk about what it was. Michelle Obama refused to say there is an Islamic group called Boko Haram and they're targeting Christians. She totally sanitized this. So people didn't know what was going on. And until you name it, you can't fight it. But just make the case to us why, just overall, you talked about all these democracies across the world that are experiencing, from Japan to democracies in Africa and Latin America, everywhere, in France, why religious liberty matters for the world, for our future, and for that global stability that you were talking about.
I can do it in one sentence, which is sure. When you have religious freedom, you have everything else. But you don't always have religious freedom if you have these other rights. And at the very, very heart, this is why, by the way, the Communist Party is so terrified of religious people. Because when you're sitting there in that communist state with its communist leader that believes they're God, okay? But, and they can force you to submit to them. If you believe, as we believe, you know, we're Christians, like, you know, we're largely pacifists. You know, we have a just war theory. Like, there's certain times where war matters. We have just wars happening, you know, around the world now. Like, we're not pacifists in that sense, but we are turn the other cheek people, you know, up to a certain, mm-hmm. certain point. And what ends up happening around the world is if you're a communist regime, you know that you have people who don't believe your God because they believe in a God, okay? Right. Sincerely religious people, if you have religious freedom, you have the other human rights around the world. And by the way, I fight for all those rights too, but my job is much, much easier, much, much easier if we have religious freedom to begin with. And I get it, when autocracies don't have religious freedom, okay? We have work to do there. And sometimes you give out the most improved player awards. Right. But for a democracy, for democracies like Nigeria, the United States, you know, Japan, like, no excuse whatsoever.
I watched a speech with Tucker Carlson, and he said he divides the world into two camps, those who believe in God and those who believe they are God. And that makes your point perfectly, Johnny.
We'll have more of this conversation after this.
I can't thank you enough. I think this topic is so ignored, and that you've dedicated your life.
I can't thank you enough. I mean, the fact of the matter is the bad guys want all of these people suffering in the shadows.
And
you shine a bright light into those dark places, it makes a huge, huge difference. And so this is the type of conversation which literally saves lives. And so I'm just very, very grateful
we're grateful to you. You've dedicated your life to being a voice and sharing those stories, giving us the information that we need to get out through our medium, through our podcast. Hopefully we'll get the story back. We've had you before on Fox and Friends. We'll hope to have you back again. But this topic is wildly important. And as you said, you don't have to be a Christian to care about religious liberty.
No doubt. Johnny, listen, thanks for all the good work you do. Thanks for being here, sharing that with us at the kitchen table, making sure other people hopefully activate and protect religious liberty here, but around the world. Thank you for being an advocate and a voice for people who don't have a voice right now. That's always so important. So we appreciate your work and you joining us as well. Thank you.
God bless you, Johnny.
Thank you. God bless you all.
Thank you.
Again, I love this podcast. You brought this up, Rachel. I didn't know this was happening in Africa, and you know, to shed a light on it, and to know that there's pain and suffering and religious persecution that's happening around the world. Just because we don't talk about it, just because it's not in the news, doesn't mean it's not happening. And it's very real for the Christians who live in these communities who aren't safe. Again, with 13,000 churches burned in Nigeria.
Sean, 150,000 people killed since 2009, but 8,000 just in 2023, since 2023. That's according to a new report by the International Society of Civil Liberties and Rule of Law. I mean, the numbers are astounding. And as he said, that he had someone high level in the intel community saying, this is the most horrific Islamic jihad that he's ever seen. It's worse than ISIS. And it's in Nigeria. And nobody's talking about it.
So,
and by the way, we talk about interfaith connections and coalitions. The story that he told about the rabbi going, where are you people?
Right.
They want you guys just as much.
So he made a point, and it's one that I make often. He said, most of these countries, almost all these countries around the world that don't respect religious liberty, in their constitutions, they have, you know, statements that protect religious liberty, though it's not enforced, right? And just
sounds
because
like a border, right?
Well, no, it's just because you have words on paper that says this is the rules by which we're going to live, just because you're guaranteed the right to freely exercise your religion or the right to free speech or, you know, a free press, just because a document says that, like the First Amendment of your Constitution, doesn't mean you actually have that right unless you have people who are willing to fight for that right.
Yes.
And when the right is threatened, people who are well-educated and knowledgeable about how important those rights are will stand up and push back against a regime that's attacking those rights. And that's the power of dumbing down education to our kids, not teaching yes. civics to our kids, not teaching history on why are these rights so important. Why did our founders make sure those rights were delineated in our Constitution, in our Bill of Rights? Why did they do that? You have to understand that history that was that you get in your, we used to get that in school in civics, they don't do that anymore. Because I think these leftists don't want young kids to know what they're giving up. So they'll freely give it. They'll freely give up religion. They'll freely give up speech. They'll give all these rights up and have no clue what they're forfeiting.
You've seen that. We talked about that poll that just came out not long ago about how many young people, it was like astounding, the percentage of young people who said that the First Amendment went too far, that, you know, hate speech needs to be controlled. But it would come down to this as well. Sean, I'm curious because maybe our listeners probably don't know this, but because of the work that you were doing in Congress on financial services and other areas, you interfaced a lot with the Black Caucus and you became friends with many members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And several of them are pastors themselves. I know that you've challenged them on abortion sort of in friendly conversations, but what could be done civically? I mean, you talked about, you know, and he did too. I thought it was great. You know, 5 visits to your local office is better than 1,000 visits to the DC office of your congressman. But also, you know, what you said about priests and bishops and pastors activating their churches on this issue. But specifically with the Black Caucus, they carry, if not anything, I think, a moral authority within the Congress on racial issues. What could be done to make this a cornerstone issue for them? Because let's face it, this is happening in Africa. And a lot of them travel to Africa on their CODELs. Those are the official congressional trips. They like to have relationships with, you know, leaders in Africa. How can we make the genocide of Christians in Africa in these most horrific, horrible ways a top issue?
That's a really good question. So I think if And I would rib them on the issue of abortion.
I know you did.
And again, I wasn't going to beat them up, though. You've challenged them very directly. I would challenge them. But
he challenged them on racial grounds that abortion was being
used to exterminate the black race.
Yeah,
is what that got me into some trouble with some of them on occasion. But
some of them agreed with you quietly.
They quietly would agree, but abortion. Is hallowed ground for Democrats, right? So that's an issue that if they want to be a Democrat, they can't move on abortion, even though their faith might tell them something different. But I think this, Rachel, to your point, I think if members of Congress, whether it was in committees or on the House floor, going, hey, listen, I didn't realize this was going on, but we should all work together to make sure we're protecting, Christians in Nigeria. How can we get to... And I think the Congressional Black Caucus would be really receptive to any other member that came and said, we want to protect, black Christians in Africa. They'd be like, actually, yeah, so do I.
Should Johnny get in front of that caucus? And I mean, maybe they just don't know. Listen, when you were in Congress, how much information, it was like drinking from a fire hose, how much information is coming your way. Would it be helpful for Johnny to go speak to the Black Caucus?
I think if they would have Johnny, that would be fantastic. But also the information that you get, it does come fast. But it is the best information, right? You get that you can get through all of the fog and get to the best information as a member of Congress.
The best experts come to you. The best authorities on any topic come to you.
100%. And you have a whole research department that'll work with you to get the right answer. And if this is a gray area, there's a couple different positions. You can have them all laid out in front of you. So I think the Congressional Black Caucus would be willing participants. I think it's an issue they probably care about. And like every member of Congress, there's a lot of things they care about. There's a lot of issues that they're dealing with. And so one or two, people working together could start a firestorm in Congress to draw more attention to this. But I appreciate Johnny. It's to tell this story is important for the Christians in Nigeria, but it's important for Christians here. When Johnny says, listen, it didn't start this way. It never starts with hacking someone to death. It starts by treating someone differently.
Yeah.
It starts by targeting a certain group of people. And we're starting to see that here in this country, the targeting of Christians, the Christian nationalists trying to,
These are reports coming out of the White House, Sean. Out of the White House saying, and remember you and I think it was you and I were talking with Pete Hegseth about the FBI situation, them infiltrating into the Christian churches.
I said,
because he's a Baptist. I said, they're coming after you guys next. And he goes, you're right. And guess what? I had a conversation with a Moroccan friend of mine, a Muslim. And I said, when the FBI infiltrated our churches, our Latin mass churches, I had this conversation with my Moroccan friend, a Muslim. And I said, I'm ashamed I didn't speak out when they were targeting your mosques at the FBI.
We let that happen. We probably supported it.
Thought, great, they're going in there and rooting out. But they did many of the same stupid stuff that they did with that Governor Whitmer stuff, Sean. Yeah. Maybe you can explain that a little bit better. But it was a lot of this hack.
In the leadership of the cell that was allegedly going to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, a majority of them were FBI agents. I mean, this was a total setup. I mean, these people were not very bright. They weren't people that think outside the box. They can't think outside the box. The FBI set the plan up for them, helped them.
They didn't have the skill set to actually enact this plan without the FBI.
I think it was the FBI's idea.
Yeah.
To kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. And they got a great story out of it. Like, oh God, these radical righties are going to, kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. It was all a plan concocted by the FBI. And this is what they do. And this brings me to another point.
Do you think they did that in the mosques, Sean?
So, to some extent, yes.
Yeah.
And again, fear oftentimes compels people to give up their rights. Mm-hmm. And after 9/11, that fear
yes.
allowed us to say, you know what, it's to keep us safe. you can go after one group of people, which were the mosques and the Muslims. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we didn't see over the horizon to go, if they can do that to Muslims, why can't they do that to Christians?
And now they're doing it to Baptists. And guess what? You may think you're safe, Presbyterians, but they're going to come after you. Maybe even the Unitarians.
The Unitarians may be safe. Unitarians, you guys may be all right.
They might be the only ones who are safe.
So do you know what the difference is, Rachel, in America, but also in Nigeria? If your family in wherever you live in your little Christian community and all the men have guns, it's a lot harder to come in and grab mm-hmm. your daughter. It's a lot harder to come and attack my Christian community if I have firearms to defend myself.
Yeah.
If you've taken away my firearm, and someone else comes in with guns, I can't defend my family.
You saw that in Texas not long ago. Remember what's his name? The pastor from the big mega church. Why is his name escaping me?
Yes.
You know who I'm talking about.
I can
about.
See his face.
Yes, I can too.
Is it Rick? Is it?
No, it's not Rick Warren. It's,
okay.
Our listeners know exactly what you're talking about. But there was a woman who came in and she shot up and then it was, she had a gun and then somebody in the church was carrying you're going to find it.
So on that point, that is why the left is so, nope, this is not.
Joel Osteen.
Thank you, Google.
I remember that
big
name.
Libs at Google saved the day. They want to take our guns away.
Yeah.
Right? Because that takes away our self-sufficiency. That takes away our ability to defend ourselves. They want us completely reliant on the state. And they'll use these shootings. They'll use all kinds of tools to get us to give up our firearms. And they're unrelenting. And they went after the NRA. They're demonizing the NRA. They're demonizing gun owners. And by the way, we just saw.
And they're organizing young people, Sean, like when any of these school shootings happen, and they are tragic and they're horrible, then all of a sudden this George Soros money and Hollywood money will come in to sort of organize these kids to become little anti-gun activists. And of course, these kids are vulnerable. They're emotional. This just happened. And they think if we just remove the guns, this will stop these school shootings. And it's just not true.
So I can't pull the stat off the top of my head, but if you look at young Americans, the Gen Zers, and even some of the millennials, the number one issue for them really is climate change. Climate change is real. They need to take stark action. Even young conservatives believe in climate change. And the reason is they've been taught it year after year after year in elementary school, in middle school, in high school, in college, on social media.
It might be the most indoctrinating topic that they have at the school.
Totally.
It's the one thing they all agree on, left and right kids.
And so what you're now seeing is these schools are now using the climate change model and they're talking to kids about guns the same way as climate change, getting kids to turn against the Second Amendment. And again, these young people, they don't know what they're giving up. What happens to a society that doesn't have the ability of its people to bear arms?
By the way, they did it with free speech too, Sean. Yeah. All this like microaggressions and the First Amendment. You know, the right to free speech has gone too far. We have to care about people's feelings. If you poll young people, it is poll a 60-year-old and poll a 22-year-old on free speech. The 70 or the 67-year-old basically Gen X and older are still like solidly in, you know, free speech. That's the American way. You poll young people, they will tell you, well, it depends. Are you hurting someone's feelings? If someone can be hurt, that words are violence. Remember, we hear that all the time from the left.
Silence is violence too. Doesn't matter what you say or do, it's going to be violent. So,
it's a great point on guns, though, Sean, because that's the next. That's part of this whole persecution. They can't persecute you as well if you
I've got a gun.
Yeah,
and
it's harder
I got
to do
a high octane gun. Put it that way. So, as we talk about this, our money is being used, your tax dollars are being used to indoctrinate your kids, which is why we always advocate, get your kids out if you can. If you've got a good school, get them out. Don't let, you know, these warped ideas be their future. Make sure they know their civil liberties. They know their rights. They know why we have them, where they came from. They're good little Americans and free thinkers. And who knows, you might have a free thinking kid that ends up being a radical liberal. But if they weren't indoctrinated, they went there themselves, okay, that's free choice. That's free will. But I guarantee you, if you send your kids to a good school, they understand their rights, they understand American history, they're going to grow up to be good patriots and good Republican voters.
And, you know, Sean, it was an interesting discussion he had on why the Vatican, you know, has taken some of these positions or remained silent on the persecution in Africa, the persecution in China, that they actually took the side. It's so embarrassing. They took the side against Cardinal Zinn, by the way. They took the side of the Chinese Communist Party against the true, and now the true Catholic Church in China is underground. And the officials you see of the church are actually Chinese government appointed. So they're really sort of mouthpieces for the Chinese government. And the Pope Francis, made all that happen. I mean, he's a really bad actor, and it breaks my heart to say it, but he truly is. Another case of that, why you don't see, for example, why didn't the Catholic Church speak up on behalf of the religious freedom of those in the Latin masses? Well, one, Pope Francis has been against the Latin rite of liturgy. And we all have to understand why. So you should be digging into that. But also, the Catholic Church is making a lot of money through the Biden administration, hand over fist, through NGOs, through the open border policy, pretending that they care about refugees and migrants. They are facilitating this and making billions and billions of dollars. And so when the Biden administration can hand out contracts to just about anybody they want, they can give it to Jewish NGOs, which they have, to Lutheran NGOs, to any kind of NGO. The Catholic Church doesn't want to get on the bad side of the Biden administration. They want those contracts.
Because they make too much money.
And so that Rachel addiction Palmer. To government money is that relationship is very dangerous. And that's another thing that you can advocate for through your social media, to your priest, to your bishop. Make your voices heard that you don't like the government, the Catholic Church's involvement in these
all
NGOs.
All religious groups. Get them out.
Yeah. Take them out.
By the way, I don't like NGOs altogether. No NGOs. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I appreciate Johnny. Great conversation. And
yes,
again, it's not just in Nigeria. It's here as well. Organize your church. Talk to your pastor. Talk to your priest. All right, your members of Congress and your senators, and talk to other churches in your community. And the impact of that will be real. You can save lives of good Christian souls who just want the right to be able to freely practice their religion. So thank you to Johnny for being with us. I want to thank you for joining us at the kitchen table. If you like the show, at the podcast, you can rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can always find us at foxnewspodcasts.com. You can subscribe there. You get a notice every time we drop, which is Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. 3 days in a row. It's pretty awesome. And listen, Rachel, good job on this topic. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Until next time, we'll see you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.